Kadosh. Remember, remember, Adonai Eloheinu.
Welcome to Romamu, an open-hearted Jewish community and house of worship, learning, and spiritual growth. You're listening to Romamu's podcast, where we share words of Torah, insights, and inspiration from Romamu clergy. Thank you for being with us.
Trigger warning, some of this will be painful. And it's fine if you need to get up or you don't want to hear more pain at this moment. So you know there are moments when global events enter your life. And when they do, everyone asks you, where were you when it happened? Like, where were you when the Twin Towers fell? Where were you when it was announced that Obama won and the streets of New York rang with shouts of joy? And where were you when Trump was defeated by Biden and people danced for hours in the streets of New York, despite a pandemic that was still raging? So when the Yom Kippur War broke out in 1973, I was in eighth grade. I was a student in Yeshiva of Flatbush in Brooklyn. And that year, I had a beloved teacher named Mar Yerushalmi, translated as Mr. Jerusalem. He was special to me, and I was special to him. He would often praise me for my answers. It was a class in Bible. Or how I did on my exams. He was intense and at the same time full of warmth and love. I live for his praise. But I'll never forget when he was called up for war and left us. I don't remember who the substitute was because the substitute really wasn't memorable. But I do remember Mr. Yerushalmi's return to the classroom, because he came back a different man, an angry man, an agitated man, a teacher who had no interest in me, who would snap at his students for no reason, who stopped praising me. I didn't understand what was going on. All I knew was I had a beloved teacher. He went to war and he returned. He was a shadow of who he had been. I learned recently that veterans of the Yom Kippur War had no access to dealing with their PTSD until recently, into the last few years. In those years, they didn't really even know what it was. So I don't know how long Mar Yerushalmi lived with his suffering. I could only pray that he got help for it, we got love for it, that his family held him through it. So here we are again, a surprise attack on a Jewish holiday, but this time atrocities committed. Crimes against innocent and unsuspecting people, grandmothers, babies, women, children, fathers, slaughtered. People who were living their lives, dancing, parenting, working, just being. This week, a dear friend of mine, Rabbi Susie Silverman, told me a story of her daughter's friend, a young woman from Darfur named Ilsa. Ilsa's father was wounded in a civilian attack in Darfur when she was 3. The year was probably 2003. And the family fled from Darfur to Egypt. But in Egypt, her family was harassed and abused. So they fled to Israel using Bedouin guides. And Israel welcomed their family with open arms, or so Susie tells me. And they settled on Kibbutz Keturah in the south in the Arava family and became my friend Susie's next door neighbors. When Ilsa finished high school, she tried to join the IDF. But Israel wouldn't have her since she wasn't a citizen. Instead, she did her shirut, her service, on a beautiful kibbutz named Be'eri, which has been in the news lately. A few miles from Gaza, a kibbutz where 1 in 10 people were murdered and scores of hostages were taken. On October 7th, Ilsa received a phone call from one of her campers who was bleeding uncontrollably. Over the phone, she tried to guide her how to stop the bleeding. I don't know what happened to the camper, but I do know that the next time my friend Susie's daughter saw her, she said her eyes were dead. She felt as if she had died inside. She's now living with the survivors of Be'eri in a hotel in the Dead Sea, near the Dead Sea, doing her best to take care of her shattered kibbutz family. This is what violence does. This is what brutality does. This is what atrocities do. This is what exposure to evil does. Not only were people physically murdered, the net cast is much, much wider than that. Infinitely so. Exposure to evil kills souls, destroys the hope and love we have in our hearts, leaves people who were once so full of life living ghosts. Even for many of us in the room who don't have family or close friends in Israel, who don't have a personal loss, we've been affected by the constant images, the stories we've been reading of endless suffering. Even we, who are so far away and protected, how can we possibly hold it? Our portion this week, the Torah portion, Noah, tells the story of the flood, but tells us more specifically and to the point about a God who is heartbroken when exposed to human evil. We're told in the beginning of the story, in last week's Parsha, that Adonai saw how great human evil was on this earth, how every plan devised by the human mind was nothing but evil all the time. Vayar Adonai ki rabba ra'at ha'adam ba'aretz, v'chol yetzer machshavot libo rak ra kol hayom. Rak ra, just evil. And Adonai regretted having made humankind on earth, and God was pained unto God's heart. V'yinachem Adonai ki asa et hadam ba'aretz, v'yit'atzev al libo. What an image. God was pained to God's heart. So when God created human beings on the sixth day, God said, "V'hine tov me'od," and it was very good. All God saw in human beings was good. And now all God sees in human beings is only evil. And God is so pained to his heart and perhaps so enraged that God destroys the entire except for one man, Noah, who brought comfort to his heart. God, it seems, was originally dazzled by God's own mirror image on this earth of a garden with Adam and Eve. And then Adam and Eve disappointed him, or him, her, or them, by eating from the forbidden fruit of the tree of knowledge. And then their son, Cain, murdered his brother, Abel, and said those infinitely cruel words, "Am I my brother's keeper?" And now in our portion, human evil is in plain sight. God understands the nature of human beings. They are only evil, rak ra. In God's sight, humans have gone from very good to only bad. God in the Torah is not immune from evil. We see later in Exodus, when the Israelites wage a war against Amalek, which is the archetypal representative of evil on this earth, God's very name and throne were dismembered, so to speak. Because in the verse after the war, you see there's a letter missing in God's name. Vayomer ki yad al kes ya milchama l'Adonai ba'amalek midor dor. Moshe said, it means hand upon the throne of Adonai. So the word kisei is missing an aleph, it's only kes, and the word Adonai, yud hei vav hei, is only ya, which is the only time in the five books of Moses that the name of God is spelled just Yah. We see it in Psalms, but not in the five books. So half of God's name is missing. And the Midrash says, and Rashi, after the Midrash, the ancient rabbis and the 11th century French commentator says, the Holy One, blessed be she, swears that their name will not be complete, nor God's throne complete, until the name of Amalek be entirely blotted out. And when the name of Amalek is blotted out, the name will be complete and the throne will be complete. So God is not immune to evil. God is not immune to disappointment. So what does our Torah portion have to teach us about dealing with human evil? I'll tell you how God managed it in our portion. It may be of comfort, but I realize then again, it may not be. After the flood, God seems to repent, maybe a little bit. After Noah makes sacrifices to God, the Torah tells us, and Adonai smelled a pleasing odor, and Adonai resolved, never again will I doom the earth because of humankind, since the devisings of the human mind are evil from youth, nor will I ever again destroy every living being as I have done. Okay, so this is confusing. God destroyed the world because human beings are evil. And now God says, I will not ever destroy the world again because human beings are evil from their very youth. Maybe here there's some acceptance. God finally understands human creatures. They're not just good. They're good and evil. First, they were only good. Then they were rock, only bad. And now there's some acceptance. And God is making a commitment to the world, to life, despite their evil. The Torah continues. Od kol yemei ha'aretz. Zera v'katsir v'kor v'chom v'kayetz v'choref v'yon v'layla lo yishbotu. Eat time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, day and night shall not cease. God commits to the rhythms of life, to its basic binaries and everything in between, cold and heat, day and night. With the flood, the natural rhythms of time stop. But then God decided to go forward with the human project despite the terrible limitations of human beings, despite their great capacity for evil. So here we are, living with the reality of evil and its impact on the world. No matter where we are in proximity to Israel, to Gaza, we have been affected by what's gone on there. We're holding what happened in some measure or another. How can we hold it? I would say that God doesn't only accept evil, God goes further. God creates a rainbow, which is an amazing thing as a symbol of never destroying the world again. Because if you think of God's bow, right, it's faced towards humanity or faced towards the earth. And what a rainbow does is exactly the opposite. So as a gesture of peace and never destroying the world again, God reverses God's own weapon. So not only does God commit to survival, God commits to a beautiful, magnificent rainbow, to ongoing beauty in the world. Even in the face of unspeakable evil, of horror, we somehow have to create a world in which we create nurture, which we create nurture and sustain beauty. I wonder still about Mr. Yerushalmi, if he's still alive, if he's recovered. I wonder about Ilsa and what her life will bring her. And I know a lot of people love her and are holding her. And I also know that it takes time. It takes so much time. Love revives. But what is there to do now but to rise up and bring to the world some loving kindness, some chesed? A group of students from Yeshiva University have declared Sunday a day of loving kindness, a day of chesed, to counteract all the evil that has been brought into the world. What can we do but hold one another up in these terrible times? When someone asks you, years from now, where were you in the days after the Simchat Torah massacre? Maybe you will be able to say, I was trying to put the world back together, even as we were all drowning in a sea of grief. Even as the divine name was dismembered. Even as people lost the ones they loved most in this world. Even as people were mad with anguish for people they love who were taken hostages. Even as eyes went dark and human light died. Maybe you will tell a story saying, I took the hands of others, and together we went looking for patches of dry land in this flood of grief. We went seeking ways to put loving kindness back into this world. And we prayed to a God with half a name and half a throne to heal us. And we weren't sure that God would, or half a God would, so we committed to healing each other. In those days, we were dreaming, desperately dreaming, of restoring brilliant rainbows to a world gone utterly dark.
Thank you for listening. Want more content like this? Subscribe to our podcast and visit romamu.org to learn more about us. Please consider making a contribution to Romamu so we can continue to fulfill our mission to help spiritual seekers deepen their connection to Jewish wisdom and practice to help them become more compassionate human beings. We hope to see you in the synagogue or the Zoomagogue soon. Romamu, Romamu, Adonai.